We lovely humans, many of us learn by hitting our head against the wall a few times, and some of us have to break down in order to break through. But how many times? Like, how many times do you need messages from the universe or just from the exterior world that it's time to change? Well, today's guest has been through several crashes. In fact, Taz Thornton, well, she's had a breakdown that turned out to be her breakthrough, and now she's impacting people far and wide as the UK's number one inspirational breakthrough speaker. She's a best-selling author, seminar leader, and coach. Taz's latest book, Unleash Your Awesome, touches on some of life's toughest experiences with tear-inducing honesty, and she provides very real opportunities to learn and grow whatever life throws at us. And Taz encourages us to stop moaning and start owning. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope that you will too. You can check out Taz online at tazthornton.com or at facebook.com/TazThorntonOfficial. Enjoy the show. Welcome to Liberate Your Authentic Self with Dr. Andrea Pennington, the prescription for living your life out loud. Tune in daily to get fired up with insight and inspiration for purposeful living, conscious relationships, and soulful success. So, Taz Thornton, welcome back to Liberate Your Authentic Self.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
It is a pleasure. I want to call today's show Liberate Your Awesome Self.
Let's do it.
Honor of you.
Thank
you. Congratulations on the launch of this new book. I'm super excited for you. I'm really, really curious to know how it feels to be putting so much of your intimate, personal, vulnerable life in print. Like, I know you do this on stage, you do this in your workshops, you share your truth in a very raw, powerful way. But now this is going to be out everywhere.
Yeah. How does that feel? Absolutely terrifying.
And you're doing it anyway.
Feel the fear and do it anyway. You know, I think I've said before, I'm a big believer in everything having happened for a reason. And if I just sit on those stories, then they can't help anyone else. And I'm all about pushing out of comfort zones. And this is like leaping out of a plane without a parachute, kind of jumping out of a comfort zone. But I'm embracing it.
Yes. Well, you are no stranger to getting pushed, nudged, or jumping out of your comfort zone. I mean, I'm really glad we're having this conversation because someone would look at you, or we see the stuff you post on social media, and it's all positive, and it's like kick ass, get out there, have an awesome life. You see the pink hair. Yeah. But they would never guess, ever in a million years, the pain, the struggle, the internal obstacles, the darkness that got you to this place of pink fuchsia light, right?
Absolutely, yeah. There's an awful lot of people who still hold on to that it's okay for you attitude. And I think that stops a lot of people from reaching their potential, from unleashing their awesome. And that's one of the reasons I'm so keen to say, hey, I haven't always been like this. It took a lot of knocks for me to say, you know, screw this. I've got to find the reason behind it. And I've said before, you know, that breakdown I had, the darkest time, I still see that as such a breakthrough because that broke me open. It cracked me open so wide that all the darkness, the negative stuff flowed out and I was able to rebuild. So I think it's important that we recognize that just because we see somebody, I don't know, driving around in a Lamborghini, they might have been sleeping on a park bench once, and we forget that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get into it. Let's get into how you start the book. And you say, look, I want you to know who I am so that you can trust me, that when I'm telling you can unleash your awesome, you really can. Mm-hmm. So take me to this pivotal moment, number one, where you had your first major crash.
Crash metaphorically and physically. Mm-hmm. So at the time, I was in a relationship that was really abusive, but it was filling that gray area gap that nobody talks about. We still talk about, even to this day, we talk about domestic abuse, and we automatically conjure up this image of a big guy punching a little lady. And of course, it doesn't always take that form. I was with a guy at the time, and I do believe even to this day that he was a good guy. He just had issues of his own. But the kind of abuse I was going through was kind of emotional abuse. There was sexual abuse. There was psychological abuse. And I had no idea that I'd been, I was going to say pushed down so far, but actually the truth of it is I had no idea how much of myself I'd lost until it was gone. And so because I was so desperately unhappy, but because it didn't fit the stereotypes, I mean, we talk more now about things like gaslighting. Back then, it wasn't spoken about. I didn't know how to get out of that. I thought about leaving. I tried leaving once and ended up going back because I was so scared and guilted into it. So that wasn't going to work. I tried telling some of my friends as far as saying he doesn't understand what no means. But of course, because they always saw the charming guy, they didn't really get the depth of it. And I didn't know how to explain the depth of what was going on. I had no idea how to even quantify it or put it into words. So I struck this deal. I thought about suicide, and then I decided that I didn't want to do that because I couldn't leave that much pain for my loved ones.
Right.
So I struck this deal with whatever universal powers were out there that every day I was going to take as many risks as I could possibly take. And if at the end of the day I was still here, then somebody meant me to be here. I'd also tried every night for months and months and months, probably longer. I tried praying for a terminal illness. How ridiculous is that? And I've done so much work energetically to undo that. Now I think back to those times, I think, Taz, how could you do that? That's so stupid.
Yeah.
So yeah, a lot of work on doing that. But I took risks. And one morning I was driving to work stupidly early. I was a news editor of a series of newspapers at the time. We needed a front page lead. I'd got a front page lead, but I didn't need to be out that early. And I certainly didn't need to be driving like an idiot at that time in the morning. So off I went onto a notorious stretch of road, one of these really windy roads, the ones that as a journalist, I and my colleagues used to write about and call a death trap road. You know,
exactly.
One of those.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Before someone's killed, that kind of road. And I found myself driving behind this brown car. And it was going way too slowly for me. So I decided, you know, risk head in gear. I'm just going to overtake in my B-Reg Ford Escort. Brakes back then aren't what they are now. So I started to overtake and then realized too late that I was overtaking on the brow of a hill. And another car approached me. And I honestly had this split second moment of this is it, bliss. I'm going, thank you. And then reality very quickly hit. It didn't matter what I did to my life. It didn't matter how much I didn't want to be here. I couldn't hurt anyone else. So I slammed on the brakes. And again, B-Reg Ford Escort over in the UK. So I'm talking 20, 25 years back now.
Yeah.
And lost control of the car, skidded into a very deep ditch. And very, I was very thankful to the tree stump that stopped my flight. Yeah. Yeah. Except that tree stump and the impending collision ended, broke my back in three places.
My God.
Yeah. And I walked around on that. I insisted that I was going to go into work. And I went into work and my editor said, Taz, you've had a shock. Let me take you to the pub at lunchtime. So we walked about a mile.
not to the emergency department. We'll take you to the pub.
No, take you to the pub. So by the time I got into work, it was probably about 10:30, 11, because I went back to my parents for a while first, just to calm down. We walked to the pub, which was probably about a mile and a half from the office. He got me a couple of stiff brandies. We walked back again, and by about 3:00 in the afternoon, I suddenly thought, ooh, that hurts.
Yeah.
And so called the doctor, was taken to the emergency room. Lay on a flat bed with my head packed in sandbags for 9 hours with nobody telling me what was going on. I really saw so many patterns in those polystyrene ceiling tiles, honestly. Then the first sign I got really that something bad had happened was when I saw my mum across the corridor talking to the guys in white coats and saw her do this.
Oh,
your mum
God.
Does that, you know. Yeah. And that's when they said spinal damage. Yeah. I crushed 3 vertebrae in different places.
And at this point, you're realizing, shit, I thought I was like giving myself an escape, but now you're even more trapped. than ever. Yeah,
now I'm even more trapped. The car's written off. And the first thing that goes through, well, the first thing that went through my mind when they said spinal damage is, Taz, you idiot, you're going to be paralyzed. And now what are you going to do? And crazy as it sounds, I went from hopeless to hopeful. In that moment, that was when everything switched. Because it's like, I can lie here, I can be trapped, I can just spiral downwards, or I can use what I've been through. And I don't know whether it was divine intervention, whether it was just common sense kicking in, whether it took that much of a sharp kick up the behind to get me thinking in that way. But that was what made me start to change direction. And I was so lucky, Andrea, because the places where the back breaks had occurred, I was able to walk out of there. I didn't need to be in traction. I had a neck brace. I had a crutch. I had an arm in a sling.
Wow.
Apart from the back and the car, nothing was actually broken. A lot of soft tissue damage. I was off work for a while, but I walked away from that. I walked away from a broken back. And
so was that crash, that realization, was that enough to get you out of that abusive relationship or what?
Yeah, at first it was. I started plotting a way out. There's a side story to this, which isn't in the book, which is that I found a solicitor and I picked the one that we'd seen operating in court as journalists so many times. And a few of us had said, if we're ever in trouble, we're going for that guy.
Why? What was it about him? Was he like sneaky or he was just cutthroat or?
He seemed to have compassion, but he was absolutely taking no nonsense. He'd absolutely call a spade a shovel. And, you know, we'd watch in court the magistrates and the judges. The second he started talking, they sat up and took notice. Hmm. And I knew he did divorce work as well, so we were going to go for him. But what I hadn't counted on is that I found out years later that he was friends with my ex's dad. So I walked away from that with not a lot. But I was grateful to him because it was that solicitor who told me, don't try and confront things.
Just leave
a note if you need to, but if you try and confront someone in this situation, you might not walk away from it.
Exactly. So at least you didn't have these ill-conceived notions that some women do, that somehow they're going to rescue or save or whatever.
Oh, I think I went through that and came out the other side. I mean, remember, I'd left once before and I ended up going back, and I knew even when I got out, and I'd systematically taken my stuff out of the house over weeks and he hadn't noticed. But I knew that if I even heard his voice or listened to him, I'd immediately kind of see the lost little boy that needed saving. And the only way I managed to stay away was just by not listening to the voicemails. The second I realized, delete, delete, delete. Not because I was being cruel or callous, but because I knew I would not be able to be strong enough to not go to avoid going back into rescue mode.
Yeah.
So I went to a different part of the country and went into hiding for a while.
Oh my heavens. And did he, how did the divorce go? Was he stalking you? Was he resisting?
He tried. I knew he had certain ways of tracing people because he boasted about that through the, again, for obvious reasons, I'm not going into detail, but with the career that he had, he could track down where people were with certain information. And my solicitor kept asking for that information, things like car chassis numbers, stuff like that, because I changed my car too. And I wasn't going there. So in the end, I just kept my head low. I didn't take any calls. Everything was through the solicitor. I left everything in the house. I didn't even go back to pick up, you know, the white goods that were left for me, things like that. And I walked away with just enough to cover my solicitor's bills, which had to be negotiated. And that was okay because I was walking away with my freedom and not feeling that I had to look over my shoulder.
You had like a new lease on life. Like you're free. You've just come through this hell-raising crash. But the other little voice that you didn't listen to, and maybe it wasn't a voice, but you mentioned in the book that you were struggling with some other realizations.
Absolutely. I'd known for years. Hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Exactly.
I'd known for years that actually I liked girls a lot more than boys. And, but because of the place I grew up in, it was so small-minded. It was very much, people didn't really leave the town very much. And, you know, my family were different. They traveled around a bit, but growing up with that kind of set of friends and that mindset, I had to be, you know, the classic, I am the only gay in the village. And clearly I wasn't. But at the time, I'd had it drilled into me for so many years by not just my surroundings, but to my family to an extent, who were trying to protect me, that this was wrong, that it was, you know, the old it's a perversion, you don't do that, your life will be over if anybody ever finds out. And so I guess once I got out of that relationship, I realized that, you know, there was more to life, and it wasn't always boy shaped. And part of me now, and this is the part that some people really struggle with, this, I am so thankful that the childhood sweetheart turned into a controller and abuser in that relationship. And he may not be now. Again, I hope he's got a wonderful life, no ill feeling there at all. But I'm so thankful that that happened, because if it hadn't, I might still be there shriveling up from the inside out. So again, everything for a reason. I don't believe in regret. It's, why did this happen? What can I learn from it? And that situation with that particular relationship allowed me again to be more true to myself. And by the time I left, I'd already met the woman who's now my partner and has been for, well, it's 20 years next year. So wow. It's all good.
It's all good. Well, that is the perspective that we all hope to get to. But every time I hear it, it's still this idea of having that gratitude. It just speaks volumes to the level of work you've done.
Thank you.
When we get back from the break, I want to hear about pivotal moment number two.
Okay.
Because you would think that, okay, that kind of accident coupled with the years of, you know, abuse that you dealt with, you'd think that, okay, new lease on life.
You'd think.
Everything's going to be rosy.
Yay!
But no. So when we get back, we will talk about the karate belt. Have you been dreaming of getting your own radio or podcast show out on the airwaves? Well, listen up. It's Dr. Andrea here. I don't know if you know this, but I've had a fun and fabulous 20-year career in professional broadcast media, including my own shows on the Discovery Channel and multiple appearances on The Oprah Winfrey Show, CNN, Thrive Global, and The Huffington Post. Now, a great deal of my work is bringing small business owners to the global stage with personal branding, publishing, and media production. And with my daily talk radio show on America Out Loud called Liberate Your Authentic Self, we're providing emerging talent with a place to be seen and heard around the world, but also on American talk radio networks such as iHeartRadio. But what you may not know is that after just 18 months, at America Out Loud, we have a monthly reach of 1 million listeners. So it's an amazing place to grow your reach. After airing on the radio, all of our shows are distributed to the major podcast networks, including iTunes, Stitcher, and more. And many hosts are enjoying between 10 and 30,000 downloads of each of their podcast episodes. And now it's time for network expansion and time for new talent. Starting this fall, we are expanding our weekday and weekend programming to include shows about a variety of topics. This is only for a limited time, and we're only taking on a handful of new talent. So if you think that hosting your own radio show could be the next big move for your visibility, and if you'd like to boost your reach, then I'd love to talk with you. Just send an email to drandrea@americaoutloud.com. You can host your own show. Host your own talk radio show and podcast on America Out Loud. Weekend or weekday slots are available. All shows are professionally produced with music and include social media promotion. Submit your own blog posts or articles for the network website for added branding and visibility. If this sounds like something you would love to do, then please do let me know so I can discuss it further with you. Reach me at drandrea@americaoutloud.com and let's talk about your exciting future on the airwaves.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome to the new era in talk radio, America Out Loud, providing you with diverse voices, heated discussions, and honest opinions about life, love, politics, health, and well-being. Discover the Out Loud perspective to society and lifestyle, politics, your faith and spirituality, personal development, and living an out loud life. You're listening to Liberate Your Authentic Self with Dr. Andrea Pennington. Many of us go through life and we have a few little bumps and bruises, lessons that we've learned along the way that help us in our present day. But my guest, Taz Thornton, who actually endured one of the most harrowing car accidents one could ever imagine and escaped an abusive relationship, you would think that she would just go on to live a happy, peaceful life, but she had a few more bumps and bruises that finally led to her breakthrough. And Taz, thank you for being so open and vulnerable, because what you're shedding a light on, especially the internal stuff, mm-hmm. is the darkness that many people can never understand. For me, I dealt with depression for many years, and I never told anyone. And the way you were able to describe some of the thoughts, I've had some of those thoughts that seemed totally irrational because life wasn't necessarily that bad. But there's a darkness that the human mind is capable of. And Absolutely. Sometimes it seems totally irrational to ourselves and to others. But if we don't speak up and share what that darkness is like, then other people are always either going to be fearful and hiding or being judged by others. So I first just mm-hmm. want to acknowledge you and thank you for that.
Thank you.
But now you got to tell us about the karate belt.
Okay, the karate belt. So I think we've ascertained that I'm very, very good at ignoring the pebble chips yeah. and ignoring the rocks and waiting for the boulders to hit full force. So by now, my back's pretty much healed. I've got away from the abusive relationship. I have a wonderful new partner. I have a new life about to start in another part of the country. I've been headhunted for an awesome job, and things didn't feel right. I was about to move away from my face. I was feeling a lot of pressure there. I was getting a lot of people, a lot of misunderstanding about the relationship I was now in. Mm-hmm. My partner's family were also having some difficulty accepting that she was in a relationship with a woman, because this was a first for both of us. And I remember lying there one night. I'd moved back into my childhood room in my parents' home. And for anyone who's ever done that, you know, all my childhood stuff was still there. It's kind wow. of a shrine to childhood, you know. Even some of the little novelty erasers I'd collected at school were there on the dresser. Yeah. Oh. So I'm lying there in my single bed and had this terrifying moment of clarity. And that's all I can describe it. As it felt as though, looking back, it was as though I'd been taken over by something that wasn't me. I had what at the time felt like a brilliantly perfect realization. It felt like
yeah.
crystal clarity that what was causing all the problems for everybody was me. Mm-hmm. I seemed to be the common denominator in the difficulties that everybody was going through. And so I knew in that moment, like somebody turning a switch, that, okay, I just need to check out then. There was no cry for help. This wasn't a, somebody look at me, somebody give me love, I need attention. It wasn't that at all. It was absolute, okay, I just need to take myself out of the situation and everybody else will have a wonderful life. There was no sadness. There were no tears. There was no anxiety. It was just, this is what I got to do. Okay, let's get on with it. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, that kind of thing. Go.
Yeah.
And because I was in my childhood bedroom, there was my old karate belt. And I sat with it in my hands and I worked it out and I knew that If I tied that to the top of the banisters, there was a sharp drop. I could just drop over there. And yeah, it'd be horrible for my parents to find me in the morning. But then once they'd got over that, everything would be great. And so because I didn't want to have anyone blaming themselves, I decided I'd send a quick text to my then best friend, who was always, always asleep at this time of night and always turned her phone off by about 9 p.m. Always. And I still remember the words. It just said, had enough, catch you on the flip side. And then here we go. Okay, so I've got to tie that there, make sure the knot's good enough. Over we go. She hadn't turned her phone off. She never didn't turn her phone off. Never. And she kept texting and I kept ignoring. And then she left a voicemail saying, if you don't reply to my text, I'm going to call the police. They know me from when we were journalists together. They will be at your parents' front door within minutes before you can do anything. And you're just going to feel really stupid. She had tipped off my then partner. So she was trying to call as well. And that was enough to break it. That moment, like, what's going on? It really was like being taken over. It wasn't a rational thought process.
All right, so here's where I got to jump in. Gosh, I have so many things I want to ask. So first of all, I mean, again, thank you for sharing that, because I've had those moments, unfortunately, those dark thoughts where a plan arrives. Yeah. You know, and these suicidal ideations and these plans, for some people, yes, they describe that it was something that they were plotting for a long period of time. But the way you've described how it just arrived, it just came to you, and it seemed crystal clear as a solution, a lot of people don't get that. Like, they think that it's just, oh, I'm ending my pain. But you saw it as, in that moment, I'm ending the pain for a lot of other people.
It was nothing to do with me.
Yeah. So, okay, I have a couple of questions, only because I also know the other side, the side where you live now, where you've experienced, you know, shamanic experiences and plant medicine and talking to animals and nature. So here's what...
Hippie shit.
Exactly, hashtag hippie shit. So let's go there for a moment. Okay. Do you think there was a presence or an entity or something in that childhood home, like... Because if you weren't like depressed and feeling miserable and you were like sucking it up, but then you just finally gave up, I'm wondering, what was it in your mind now as who you are today? What do you think caused that?
I'd be lying if I said I hadn't considered the possibility that there was a walk-in. There was a lot of dis-ease in that home. I had a happy childhood. That was lovely. But certainly many of us had been aware of spirit in that home for a while, and it wasn't always a happy energy. So I don't know. Was it my unconscious mind playing tricks with me, or did something walk in? I still don't know. But the reason I talk about that, and the reason I'm so keen to get that story out there, is that I'm sure that if that phone had been switched off, I probably wouldn't be here. And how many other people have that moment of clarity and actually go through with it? And of course, we don't hear about that because there isn't the planning stage and they haven't told everyone, and there hasn't been the years and months of anguish where everyone's worried and putting them on suicide watch. That wasn't there. How many people do we lose because that moment happens and they go? And the fact that I could be jolted out of that so easily makes me want to scream that from the rooftops, because if we just, as difficult as it feels at the time, if we just stand still and just wait, give it time, it might just pass. And so many things I couldn't be doing now, I couldn't have done if that phone had been switched off as it usually was.
Well, part of what your mission is now is really helping people, you know, unleash their awesome, but it's a matter of reclaiming sort of power and dominion over your life. So for people who may have experienced whatever other spirit or drug culture or anything that where they've given away their power, you've talked about it before as your sovereign self. Like, I wonder if in those moments one could call on the higher self and say, you know, help.
Absolutely.
Step in.
If, If we have an awareness to do that, absolutely. Yes, yes, yes. And I was very aware of spirit back then, but I hadn't done any of the training. I didn't know what to do with it outside of, oh, there's a figure over there, and I think that's somebody that isn't alive. And hold on, you want me to give a message to who? I'd got that.
Yeah.
But no formal sovereign self, no idea of, you know, power animals and spirit teachers, how to protect. No idea at all. So, yeah, absolutely. I would say to anyone, even if they haven't done the work in that moment, just try and tune into that element of yourself. And we all have it, I believe. We all have this the element of ourselves that represents the absolute truth, and the element of ourselves that still remembers why we're here and what we needed to learn and why we've come back into this lifetime. If we call on that for a second, just for a moment, there's always a tiny, tiny kernel of hope there. I remember working with a lady some years back now, and she'd been through a really difficult time, and I was doing some work to bring parts of her energy back that she'd lost. And I've never seen anybody so empty. It was like there was just that tiny spark left. Everything else had gone. And I remember saying to her, if you check out now, what if this is part of the journey? And when you come back again, if you believe that, you've then got to go through it all over again to get to the lessons that you're about to throw away.
Mm.
And that was enough, because, and sometimes that feels terribly ruthless having to hit people with that one, but if that's what it takes to stay, if the idea that actually you might be jumping out too early and you'd have to go through it all over again in the next life, if that's enough to keep you rooted, hell, I'm going to do it.
Well, that was very similar to what I heard. So laying on the floor in my childhood home, I was just a teenager.
Yeah.
I had those dark, bleak thoughts of leaving the earth. And it was this voice that said, listen, honey, you're pretty aware. And if you check out now and you come back, who knows? You might not have this same level of awareness. And you might have to go through even more dark shit. And that I had, and like you, Taz, I didn't have anyone teaching me. I had never even really studied or heard of this concept of reincarnation.
Yeah.
So, but it was enough. It was enough for me to say, okay. And that voice was just basically saying, stay the course. You can get through this. And, and obviously I'm still here. So
thank goodness.
Yeah, I think so. Now life
you're okay.
Does get better, you know.
It does. It really is. Yeah, I think that's really important. Being suicidal and actively wanting to die and just not wanting to be here anymore and needing a break from it all. And people need to understand that. Sometimes when we have these moments, it's not about I want to end my life. It's I just need a break. I need to just escape. And if that's the only way that I just, you know, stop the world, I want to get off. It's that. And there's a difference, I think.
Yeah, there is. But, you know, before we get into hashtag hippie shit and woo-woo land, because I think there's a danger that people still need to be aware of. One is when we make a declaration, whether out loud or in our head, saying, I don't want to be here anymore. Yeah. I've heard some spiritual traditions say, be careful, because that's an invitation. There are spiritual entities that would love to get a hold of a human body.
You're setting an intention, aren't you? Absolutely.
Exactly. It's an intention, quite
careful.
Possibly an invitation for someone to come in and take over your body. But we'll get to that in a minute. Mm. I think to make this relevant for everyone listening, though, let's take them through the final pivotal moment to the point where you did break through and it has stuck for you.
Okay. So by now, fast forward a few years, I'm UK director of what at the time was one of the world's biggest multinational publishing companies. It's life's good, you know, I got the nice car, the pay packet, the nice holidays. I have a home and 2.3 furry children, but children nevertheless. That's dogs and cats, not werewolves, just in case you know,
woo-woo
stuff. everything on paper looked wonderful, but I was still dying on the inside out.
Hmm.
And it's because all that stuff, if we go back to the backbreak incident, when I had that moment of I'm going to use this stuff to help other people, I've got to do something with it. I'd parked all that and just gone into goal setting career mode because that's easier to do, isn't it? Hey, you've done that, you know.
Yeah.
It's so easy. Skips it. Comparatively, it's easy.
Yeah.
And I got to the point where I realized that I'm skipping forward. I'll tell you that bit in a moment. It took another one of those boulders to shake me out, to shake me out of the pinstripes. And what happened was I'd realized that I'd been going downhill. I'd realized my mood was slipping. I was on antidepressants. I was effectively hiding behind the pinstripes every day. But then I had my 8 weeks of hell. So in an 8 week period, lots of stuff happened. But the headlines were my uncle died. My dad came out of hospital. We thought, great, dad's home. And he died that night. Gone. Some debt came to light I hadn't been aware of, which meant that my financial future, as I thought I had it, was gone. Somebody in our family was diagnosed with a really nasty condition, which rocked us all. And then my partner was made redundant. Oh, and 2 days after dad died, I had to go to a meeting in head office in Paris. Had to go. No, Taz, you're prioritizing. You're getting out of the way. So I went to Paris to this meeting at head office. I was told by my colleagues not to mention the fact that my father had died because it might dampen the spirits in the meeting.
Oh, God.
It was October. They're talking about their Day of the Dead celebrations, and I'm like, everything's fine. When I got back from that meeting, the one night I'd left my mum on her own, somebody had broken into all the outbuildings and stolen a load of the stuff that was going to shore us up a bit. So hello, guilt. So all of that was in kind of an 8 week period. And I remember just getting through my dad's wake, getting through it, doing all the calls. I'm an only child, so I was taking on the responsibility for that. And when I found myself sitting at my mother's dining room table, rocking back and forth and crying like a baby, I realized something had to give. And again, it couldn't be me. Now, the realization happened, but I still kept going to work. I still kept doing the job, and there was less and less of me every day. You know, when you speak to your assistant, I had an assistant. When you speak to your assistant and say, I need to make sure that I'm out of the office at least 3 days out of every five because I can't deal with being here.
Yeah.
You got a problem. So I kept going for 4 years, and then I dug my way out with the teaspoon. And it was only in retrospect that I recognized, actually, Taz, you had a breakdown, massive breakdown. I don't know how I was doing it. I was going to work in the morning, parking somewhere at lunchtime, calling home, crying, getting home, crying all night, face back on in the morning, mask. And it took that. It took all those things hitting and recognizing that I was having a breakdown to realize that that was a breakthrough.
Mm.
And it was rock bottom time. It was lower than I'd ever been before, even with all of those other things. And yet somehow I kept going. And now that was the best thing that could ever have happened to make me rework and remold my life.
Well, when we get back, I want to pick it up there so that you can tell us, how did you remold and remake your life? And now what you're helping people around the world do in unleashing their awesome. When we get back, let's pick it up there.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
You're listening to Liberate Your Authentic Self with me, Dr. Andrea Pennington. Check out the live version of this show, where I answer your questions in real time. Visit facebook.com/Dr. Andrea Pennington. You can also submit your questions via email. Send it to drandrea@americaoutloud.com. That's drandrea@americaoutloud.com. Well, if one near-death accident isn't enough, how about two? No, okay, what about an internal death? Like, we all go through life putting on the mask, putting on that happy face, trying to get through, pursue some major goal that everyone thinks is going to make us feel happy. But what happens when it just doesn't? When it doesn't amount to the kind of life that inspires you? Well, that breakdown could possibly be your breakthrough. According to Taz Thornton, that's exactly what it is. And she's now helping people around the world use those kinds of breakdowns to find your inner strength and unleash your awesome. So Taz, take us back to the rebuilding process so that we can get to the good stuff.
Okay. So while I was still going to work through this process, I was pulling on various tools and skills to just get through the day. A lot of it was, I won't lie, a lot of it was robot mode. It just was.
Yeah.
But what kept me filled up was I was already working with shamanism by then. I had lots of other spiritual toolkits. I had, you know, I'd worked a bit with crystals. I'd got up to Reiki master. I'd done NLP practitioner. I'd got some hypnosis skills, and I was pulling on all of them as well as the antidepressants. But what kept me going while I was at work, I realized the only thing that was giving me a kick was finding people who were struggling and saying, hey, that staff member that you're about to boot, can I have a go? Of course, they weren't my staff, nothing to do with me. But the answer was invariably, yes, I lost cause, but have a go.
Yeah.
And every time I managed to turn them around. Or if there was somebody who was struggling outside of work and people at work knew about this person, I said, can you go and see if you can sort this person out? And every time I managed to turn them around, every time I managed to redirect them, to switch their focus. Because, you know, it's not always about changing your life. It's about changing the way you
yes.
look at life. It's about changing these babies a lot of the time. And so I recognized that I needed to do something with that kind of work. And of course, that reminded me of the I guess it was a pledge I'd made at the time, lying there on that flatbed. I've got to use this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, I could be saying, woe is me. Why am I going through all these difficult times? Or I could be saying, hold on, look. Now look at all these other tools I have in my kit bag. I now have the broken back. I have the karate belt incident, the wanting to get off life. Now I've got a breakdown to add to it. My God, I could really change some lives with this stuff. So I set a plan in motion. I dug my way out with the teaspoon. I left that job with no savings, no safety net, no idea how on earth we were going to pay the bills. My partner was self-employed, and at the time she was just in a copywriting business. And the plan was I'd take the big job and then she could write her book and just kind of,
mm-hmm.
she still hasn't written the book, but there are about three in here that need to come out, you know. And so, wow, well, there's no big wage coming there. I'm about to leap. What are we going to do? And the pull was so strong that I had to just leap. And I remember speaking to a Native American medicine woman who I'd met at one of these mind, body, spirit fairs sometime before. I think she's back in the States now. And I remember her taking my hands and looking me in the eye and saying, Taz, you need to remember that the biggest reason people fail to take a leap of faith is that they forget the Creator will catch them.
Mm. Beautiful.
So this is where, yeah, and I still use that to this day. And that's where I made another pact. So now I've moved from the, I'm going to take risks and if you want me to be here, I'll still be alive, to, okay, you want me to do this? I know you want me to do this, so I'll take the leap. But for goodness sake, you've got to remember, we're still living on the material plane. And if I'm going to do this, you need to make sure there's enough money coming towards me to make this sustainable. And so that was the pledge. And I put it out there and I came home one day and said, darling, I've done it. And she said, you've done what? And I said, I've done it. And she went, oh, you've done it. I went, not really, but I am going to do it next week. And I've checked the reaction. And so that's what we did. I walked into work with, I redrew the entire company organogram without me in it, worked out where they'd make cost savings in replacing me, give promotions to other people who deserved it, where there was wriggle room for an extra couple of staff if they took my wage out. And I presented it to the other director. I kind of looked after the creative and the editorial, and she looked after the sales and the marketing. And she sat there and said, oops, Taz, you don't appear to be on this. And that was the only time I broke down at work. I did this kind of, oh, no, I'm not. And that was it. And she supported me and helped, and we got out there, and the rest is history. And at first, I worked to work with my partner to kind of retarget her business and move it from copywriting into Turquoise Tiger as it is now. So she does a lot of content coaching, telling people how to get their stories out there. And the plan was that when we built that up enough, I'd keep doing my stuff part-time. And when that built up enough, the scales could tip and I'd step away from Tiger. And that happened about 5 years earlier than we thought it was, and it would. And here we are. And I'm going around unleashing awesome all over the place.
Wow. So amazing. You know, that story reminds me of something that people often talk about, that when your life is feeling like shit, or especially when you feel like you don't have anything, that's when you can start giving, whether that's giving of your time or your advice or even just a nice note to someone. And it shifts something. Like, we humans are literally wired that when we contribute to others, when we give to others, something shifts in us and we feel more resourceful.
Absolutely. The richest man is the one who gives everything away.
Yes. Yeah. So that's something that just automatically happened for you, that you're just like, oh, here's someone who's looking a little broken. Let me help fix them. And that gave you, it sounds like, the confidence to recognize, wow, I'm good at this. And you started to feel like your true self. Yeah. Like,
it crystallized the mission. That's what it did. It crystallized my mission.
Got it.
And I went from, well, I could do a bit of this, could do a bit of that, to, whoa, this feels so right. This is why all that happened. This is why. And so it also allowed me to work with all kinds of different people. So, you know, I work with a lot of people who are self-employed, who either don't know how to get out there. And I talk to them about speaking with their authentic voice and telling their story instead of buy my stuff. Mm-hmm. And I know you do a lot of that too. It's powerful, powerful work.
Yes.
I can work with high powered people in business who know they're not fulfilled and buying another Maserati is still not going to fill them up.
Yeah.
And work with them to fill the, you can't fill that gap in your soul with material goods.
Yeah.
It gives you a quick buzz and then it's gone again. So I can work with people who've been to that place. And I can also work with people who've been through abuse. There's a few years back, one of the local authorities saw a video I put out there. And it was the one that went wild. It was an off-the-cuff video sitting in my car where I was talking about some of the stuff we've just touched on, actually, Andrea. The whole point of, I wanted to check out and I didn't. And if I had, I would have missed all this. Mm-hmm. And there's so much more. You got to hang on. And that video went viral. I stopped counting, like 40,000 views. I think it ended up in Diva magazine and Kindred Spirit and Huffington Post. It went all over the place. And somebody forwarded it to one of the local authorities over here, who then got in touch and said, hey, these are Unleash Your Awesome workshops you're running. Do you think, could we do something with our people who've been through abuse? Because, you know, the system will take them so far. We'll get a safe house. We can provide some counseling, but there's nothing to, we're missing something. And so I started doing that work as well. So it's all linked for me. Some people say, particularly in business, well, what on earth does confidence have to do with visibility and speaking your truth? Well, the reason
everything.
People don't. Absolutely. It's so, the line for me and for you is so clear, but people don't see it. They can't understand what the connection is. But if you're not in, if you're not aligned with who you are, if you're not connected to your soul's message, if everything's from here, if there's head, heart disconnect, then you're probably going to be doing the wrong thing. That's never going to fill you up. So if we get you doing the right thing that uses your skill set and gives you that, you know, that feeling that you sometimes get when something feels so right, it kind of feels like your eyeballs are lighting up from the inside out.
Yeah.
That thing, if we can get you to that point and turn that into a business and then you get visible, that cuts through all the noise, because there's noise out there all over the place. But what's missing is authenticity. And I find it interesting that so many people, particularly in business now, are really dissing the word authenticity. So many people I'm seeing now are saying, I hate the word authenticity. That's interesting. Why is that?
Because they have a little integrity problem going on the inside, right? That's what
Maybe.
Happens when you've Fabia got something.
For me to suggest that.
When you've got something in your shadow, you know, when you see someone else out there unleashed and expressing it, you know, one of the reactions is to judge it and to diss it.
Absolutely. Rattling cages. Yeah.
And that's your business now.
Well, yeah.
With this book, Unleash Your Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing we have to kind of touch on is your belief that we are all holding some sort of awesomeness inside of us.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So let's just start off with just an example. When you say unleash your awesome, what is awesome?
Awesome is really that feeling I just described, that moment where you get to when your heart sings and your soul dances and your eyes light up and you just feel in that moment, whoa, I could conquer the world today.
So I call that
what
flow.
If we held that flow, it's absolutely flow. Yeah, it's flow. That's a moment that expanded turns into flow.
Yes.
And people don't recognize that they can have that all the time. They think they've got to go and, you know, have a big holiday or go on a roller coaster or drive a fast car or go on a honey sex spree or something. You don't need to get those highs. We're used to being on, energy naturally undulates, but we find ourselves so often trying to find the highs. We're going to this peak high, but then we've got to come down the other side. I remember when I was going through that breakdown working with Chris Lutterchow, the shaman I work with most frequently and for the longest time. And I asked him, Chris, I need you to look at me and tell me what's going on because I can't, my head's too fuzzy. I can't work it out. And he did a bit of work and he said, Taz, what I'm seeing is it's almost as if your spirit has split into two, and one half of you wants to live and wants to embrace everything and wants to say yes to life, and the other half of you just doesn't want to be here. And those two halves of your soul are refusing to share the space at the same time.
Wow.
So, yeah, what do I do with that then? He said, well, you need to learn to say yes to life, and to get that balance back, you need to go out and do those things that give you the lift. And for me, that is things like roller coasters, like going to, you know, over here it's Go Ape. I don't know what it is there. They're like the treetop adventures, things like that that get your adrenaline going. That's it for me. That's what makes me feel alive. Getting out in nature, reconnecting, taking my shoes off and walking on the earth, you know?
Yeah.
And so I did a lot of that. I did a lot of prayer time. I did a lot of working with plant spirits, not as in ingesting, but going and finding the spirit of the plant that wanted to work with me for months and months and months. I had mint leaves hung over my bed because I was connecting with the spirit of the mint.
Okay.
And it was that. Sometimes we're so aligned. And I think in this Western world where we have this head-heart disconnect, we think we're conditioned to think everything's from here.
Yeah.
It's no wonder these things explode.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That this breaks because we ignore this. We put all the pressure on here. So this explodes and this breaks.
Yeah.
And the gut, well, we just get ulcers and indigestion and all kinds of stuff going on in the gut. We forget that, you know, look at embraining. We know we have neurological processes now in the gut and in the heart as well as the head. We essentially have three brains.
Yeah.
But we're just using that and we're forgetting spirit. So do we all have awesome insiders? Yeah, you're damn right we do, but we forget how to tap into that.
Yeah. Well, I love that in the book you give people this awesome challenge. It's like, you know, go out there, figure out the activities that make you feel most alive, that get you into that sense of flow. And you're like, okay, grab a notebook, make a list, and go do them.
Yeah. Yeah, I tried to do that. Well, I think I did. At the end of every chapter, there's this awesome challenge, because it would have been very easy to have just kind of rewritten a my life was shit and now it's great. But that's a great ego vanity project, but it's not really putting much out into the world. So I was like, okay, how did I get through these things? How did I get past these barriers? How can I put that into exercises so that people can physically take something away, can do something? Because it's okay just reading, but if we just read and then sit, you got to do something.
Exactly.
So yeah, awesome challenges at the end of every chapter, and that's one of them.
Yeah, awesome. Well, Taz, it's been wonderful to connect. Thank you so much again for sharing the depth of your experience. So nowadays, you're there in central London, you're hosting events, you're, of course, on social media. Where do you want this book to take you? What's next for you?
What's next for me is growing more of what I'm already doing. And yeah, that's the thing that makes people shake their heads. What's your ambition, Taz? What do you want to do? Well, I'm already doing it, but I just want to grow it.
Yeah.
So I'm actually based in Lincolnshire, but I do a lot of work in London. I run a lot of workshop versions of the book. Mm-hmm. In fact, Unleash Your Awesome started as a workshop program, and then it turned into the book. And now it's getting a refresh to take in some of the challenges from the book. I want people to find me. You know, call out to everybody with events out there. I want more speaking gigs because I need to talk about this stuff. I'm already getting them. I need more. And it's not because of Taz Vanity. It's because in order to help people, people need to know I'm here.
Yes.
So You know, sometimes we'll look at people will look at me and think, oh, she's such a publicity whore. Absolutely, because I need to get to the people I can help. I do. That's why we need to be seen. So there's already two more books in the pipeline. I'm currently writing Whispers 2. The next book is actually there's three more. I'm not sure whether the next one is going to be hippie shit or whether it's going to be Eyeball. Similar things. Eyeball is all about being authentic and being seen and using it. Hippie shit is about blending the spirituality with business, how to go through life. You don't have to be an ass to be in business. You can, you know, balance all this stuff.
Exactly.
So it's more and more of the same. Just find me, people, whether you want to hear me speak, whether you want to read a book, whether you want one-to-one coaching, for goodness sake, if you think I can help, if I'm resonating on any level, look me up and let's talk.
Well, I'd like to put you on the spot. You know, I'm going to be in London October 27th through the 29th, hosting an event called, Speak from the Heart. It's an authentic speaking workshop for speakers. And how about you come and grace our stage with a little short presentation?
Well, I'll tell you what, I need to check my diary, but if I'm free, I'll be there. And if I can't do this one, let me know where you're going to be next and let's make it work.
All right. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Well, you can find Taz Thornton online. Just look her up on all the social media platforms at Taz Thornton.
Apart from Snapchat. I don't get Snapchat.
Yeah, I haven't gone there either.
I'm on it, but I'm not on it, you know?
Yeah. But you can find her online and you can check her out. Definitely check out the videos and all of the positivity, especially that you're sharing on Facebook. That's where I get most of your stuff. Taz, thank you once again. And where would be the best website besides social media?
TazThornton.com.
All right.
Make it easy.
Easy peasy lemon squeezy. Well, my friends, it has been a pleasure to connect with you again today. Just remember that you are a gift to the world. So share your awesome presence with passion. Much love. Bye. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at Dr. Andrea. And did you know, I'm on the radio daily. Visit AmericaOutloud.com to download the Talk Radio app.